Hey everyone, how you doing? This is Amon Green, the Green Bay Packers all-time leading rusher, and you're listening to The Average Cheese, hosted by Dell and Todd, two lifelong Packer fans talking about their favorite team, the 13-time champion, Green Bay Packers. Go Pack, go.
What the hell's going on out here? Everybody's grabbing out there. Nobody's touching. Get grabbing, everybody.
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win.
So welcome to episode 138 of the Average Cheese Podcast. It's Peter and I tonight. Todd is trick-or-treating the mean streets of Northern Virginia right now with his son or daughter. So Todd, when you hear this, soak up all those moments, brother, because they don't last forever. Peter, it's good to see you for episode 138, the Estes Hood version of the Average Cheese, which we'll get to in a minute. Thanks to Rhonda and the folks at R&M Management. Thanks to Dwight at ddgcustoms.com. And thanks to Dan and the folks at Bob Anderson Builders. Okay, Peter, it's Estes Hood, episode 138.
I'm going to disappoint you, I'm afraid. It's not Estes. Well, we will do Estes Hood on episode 238, okay?
All right.
So when I knew it was going to be number 38, there was one guy that absolutely jumped out at me, and it had to be this guy, Arnie Herber. So Pro Football Hall of Famer and one of the NFL's kind of pioneers of the passing game, earned a reputation very early in his career as a great thrower of the long pass, very accurate thrower of the deep ball. And he wore number 38 for the Packers for five seasons. He also wore seven other numbers for the Packers, which I think is probably a record. So he wore eight numbers in total over 11 seasons. I think the first thing that stood out with Arnie Herber is that he's a Green Bay native. So born and bred in Green Bay, attended Green Bay West High School. So when we talked previously about doing an all-Wisconsin team, he was the first guy that jumped out at me for that team because of his where he came from.
I need to add him to that sheet. I have actually made a spreadsheet. I'm adding him to
okay.
It. Continue.
Yeah, and he was a guy that he played a couple of years of college football, one at Wisconsin, and then he got a tryout from Curly Lambeau, who obviously knew him from his days in high school in Green Bay, got a tryout from Lambeau and joined the Packers in 1930, played in the season opener in 1930, and in doing so became the youngest player to play a season opener for the Packers. 20 years and 5 months and a few days, which is still the youngest player to play a season opener for the Packers. Kenny Clark came close, just a few months older than Arnie Herber was in 1930. And on those Lambeau teams from 1930 to 1940, which was his Packers career, he became the right halfback, which in Lambeau's system in those days was the guy that threw the majority of passes. So in essence, the equivalent of today's quarterback. Although there was a quarterback on the roster then and part of the formation, but the quarterback then was more of a blocking back. Like I say, Herber became probably the NFL's first great deep passer. Packers won four NFL championships in Herber's 11 seasons, 30, 31, 36, 39. And he led the NFL in numerous passing categories on number, you know, quite a few occasions, you know, passing categories like yards, touchdowns, completions, attempts, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and some of those still stand as Packers records today. So, for example, you know, he led the league in passing yards three times in his 10 years or his 11 seasons with the Packers. No other Packer has done it more than twice. So even through the years of Starr, Favre, Rodgers, Herber still owns that record for the Packers. And there's a number of those types of things. Led the league in completions in three separate seasons. Again, no other Packer has done it more than twice. So some of the stuff that he was doing back in the 1930s, you know, still high up in the Packers record books today. He became the NFL's first 1,000-yard passer in a season in 1936, which doesn't sound so much now, but when we consider, A, the number of games that they played back then, but also, you know, it was predominantly a running game. So to throw the football that much, to get beyond the 1,000-yard mark was a special milestone. He threw, obviously, to Don Hutson for Hutson's first career catch in 1935, which was an 83-yard touchdown, which beat the Bears. It was the only score of that game. Threw a 92-yard touchdown again to Hutson in 1939 and was just a dominant passer in that era and pretty much predated the guy that most I think most NFL fans would assume as the start of the passing game, and that's slinging Sammy Barr, who played for Washington. Herbert's career pretty much predated most of Sammy Barr's career. So he played with the Packers until 1940, and then the passing mantle with Green Bay passed on to Cecil Isbell, who we've talked about in a previous episode. And Herbert retired and then came out of retirement in 44, played 2 years with the Giants, led the Giants to the championship game in 44. Losing to the Packers, ironically. And then when he retired again, he was a multiple-time All-Pro, member of the NFL's All-Decade team for the 1930s, member of the Packers' all-time teams, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Packers Hall of Famer, Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Famer, all of the things you would expect for somebody that had such a great career. It's worth checking this out because this film exists. In 1937, MGM made a film called Pigskin Champions, which featured the Packers. And one of the things in that film, they asked Arnie Herber to see if he could throw the football through a 3-foot square pane of glass that was hanging from the crossbar. So he was on the 50-yard line, and they asked him to see if he could throw the football through the pane of glass, which, of course, the first practice throw he did went straight through the pane of glass before they'd started filming. They then had to go and source another 3-foot square pane of glass, which they put up, switch the cameras on. First time again, Herber straight through the pane of glass. And you could see awesome. That, as I say, that it's probably on YouTube. I've gone on a little bit, but I'm quite passionate about how great a player Arnie Herber was in those early days of Packers and NFL history. You know, and we think a lot about the great players from the Lombardi era onwards, but this guy predated that and was one of the truly great Green Bay Packers.
When Arnie Herber was throwing the football, it wasn't shaped the same as it is today.
And that's a really good point. So there's a couple of things there. Absolutely, it wasn't a soccer ball shape, but it was a lot closer to being a soccer ball shape than the football is today.
More rugby ball shaped, right?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot more difficult to throw. And the other thing, which I should have mentioned, was that he was renowned for having extremely small hands and small fingers. And he found a way of holding the football where it was mainly in the palm of his hand rather than in the fingers, which was kind of, I want to say it was unique. There were probably others that did it as well, but it was certainly an unusual grip that he had on the football, but it worked for him.
Thank you so much for that. That was better than Estes Hood. Well, there's a lot of slices. So this might be a long episode, folks. Buckle up, because here we go. First of all, Rashawn Gary signs an extension, $96 million in new money, 4 years. I can't think of a Packer that I would want to sign to an extension more than Rashawn Gary. I don't know there's a guy out there more valuable than Rashawn Gary long-term. He's the guy. I don't know who else is out there. Jair got signed to an extension a couple of years ago. Who else is there? Maybe Jordan Love, when we see what he does or doesn't do. Aaron Jones, probably not. I mean, I'm just saying I'm happy to see you, Rashawn Gary. I'm happy for you as an individual, and I'm happy for the Packers because I think that's the guy they needed to put money on.
I'm absolutely with all of that. Rashawn Gary, absolutely agree. I mean, I think that he's close to, if not, been the best player on this football team right now, albeit played limited snaps coming back from the injury and stuff. But yeah, there isn't a player that you would more want to get re-signed to a long-term deal than Rashawn Gary. And you have to say the deal itself, whilst it's a lot of money, it feels like a good deal. I looked at the cap numbers that our good friend Kenny Ingalls posted on Twitter. And if he plays out the deal as it is, he never reaches $30 million a year in cap hit, which is
awesome.
Which is good. It's really good. In this. All round, that seems to be a really good deal.
Put a poll out there, Peter, you did, as part of the Average Cheese, about what she should do at the trade deadline. Interestingly enough, 60% of the poll, and it was, I think we had almost 300 people answer it, so there's a real sample size, said that we should deal guys. And we did today. Rasul Douglas went to Buffalo along with a fifth-round pick for a third-round pick, which would be a better fucking put. They better trade up with, otherwise they gave him away for nothing. Thoughts on Rasul Douglas going to Buffalo?
Surprised, but I'm not shocked. I think there were a number of players that, if the Packers were going to make a trade, there were a number of players that you could possibly have pinpointed. I think we talked about a couple last week. And I think Rasul Douglas was on that list. So it wasn't a shock, but it was a surprise. And I guess because of all the players this season, he's the guy that appears to have been a leader on the field, is a guy that appears to play very consistently. It's just one of those solid guys that in a team that's struggled, he's been one of the better players. So I think that's the kind of surprise. The other way of looking at that, and it's interesting that they've sent the fifth round pick as well as Rasul Douglas. So in essence, you're trading that fifth round pick. You're moving from a fifth rounder to a third rounder and giving up Rasul Douglas to do that. But I guess the other thing it does is it frees up salary cap space. So they're going to free up $6.5 million next year, although there'll be a dead cap number for Rasul Douglas, which is 5 point something. His cap number goes down from 11 to 5. So they're saving $6.5 million. Not only are you getting the third round pick, you're getting $6.5 million back next year. And also, I believe, although I'm not sure I've seen this reported anywhere, I may have missed it. Also, I believe there's $2.5 million of void cap number from 2025 as well. Buffalo will pick that void year up. They're clearly, in making this move, they're clearly looking to the future, obviously, for the draft pick, but also to start to give themselves, I guess, perhaps a little bit of maneuverability in next year's free agency. I have to have a chuckle, right? So when I was reading about this earlier, I all of a sudden saw Preston Smith's name trending on Twitter.
You're like, he's gone too, huh?
Well, yeah. So I thought, what's going on there? I can't credit the person that first came up with this because I've no idea who it was that first came up with it because there were loads of people talking about it on Twitter. But I did have a chuckle because they were all talking about how Preston Smith has now obviously moved up the cornerback depth chart with Rasul Douglas moving on, which it wouldn't have surprised me if perhaps they'd considered deals for some of the other guys that would become available, like Montez Sweat, who's gone to the Bears, that kind of stuff. But I also do believe that this wasn't the year for the Packers to be trading for players. That kind of didn't make sense, unless you could get a relatively young player that you could be getting for the next 4 or 5 years. You're certainly not trading for a guy that's going to help you this year because you need more help than just one guy can give you.
I'm disappointed that Rasul Douglas is gone. Marcy asked me if it was because he's always running his mouth, and I would say that might be part of it. And if that's the case, that's a fucking problem, because someone has to say that there's a problem here. I wouldn't be surprised, and this is just my own head, I didn't hear any of this, I didn't see any of it on Twitter, I wouldn't be surprised if he was like, I want the fuck out of here, because this is a mess. What you're doing here is a fucking mess. Remember last year we talked about how Jerry Gray said that Rasul Douglas was in his playbook. He was always studying film, all of those things. You want those guys in your locker room. Jair Alexander, I don't know if he does it or if he doesn't, but Rasul Douglas being angry at another player was a weekly occurrence. And I have to assume if Rasul Douglas was in his playbook, then he was pissed because someone was doing something incorrectly on the defensive side of the ball. My other regret is that Rasul Douglas isn't going to throw his helmet at Joe Barry at any time, so I'm a little disappointed for that. Packers pulled him off the shit heap, and he was great considering.
And it will be interesting. So Goody's got his press conference tomorrow, which is his kind of the one every so often that he has to do. It will be interesting to see what he has to say. Now, generally, as we all know, at presses and stuff, not too much is given away for obvious reasons. They don't want to air stuff in public, but it will be interesting to see what went there. And I'll also be interested to hear whether, and we're not going to hear names, but just to hear whether there were conversations about other players as well.
Other guys that were dealt today or in the last couple of days, Chase Young to San Francisco. What in the actual fuck? Why would Washington trade him to San Francisco and make them dang near the best defense in the league? I don't get that. Third round pick. Leonard Williams went to Seattle. I don't think that's a surprise. I don't think he was going to re-sign in New York with the Giants. So I think that is, we're just going to get rid of him and we're going nowhere anyway, kind of thing. And then, like you said, Montez Sweat to the Bears. I think that's an interesting transaction. They gave up a second round pick. I would say that if I'm taking Chase Young or Montez Sweat, I'd rather have Chase Young. I mean, they're similar guys. I think Chase Young in the right circumstances is probably more athletic and maybe a better player, but it's the Bears. So glad they gave up a big pick. Any thoughts on any of the guys that were dealt?
It will be interesting to see what Montez Sweat does in Chicago. I think that, I mean, it's a difficult one. It's a second round pick, sounds like a lot, but the guy was a first rounder. But then you say, well, if it's not a second rounder, it's a third rounder. And I think if you'd got a player like that for a third rounder, you'd think, I'd absolutely take a third rounder and trade it for that guy. So I think second round pick's probably fair. The stuff at the trade deadline, you know, there's always reasons behind it. Our teams just building for next year's draft and trying to get as many picks as they can. I'm surprised that the Bears are buyers this stage of the season, particularly for a guy, you know, and I like Sweat as a player. I liked him coming out of college, but he's a guy that's in the last year of his contract. So it's a guy that they've got to do a deal with, else he's a free agent after this year and you've given up a second round pick for him. Now, I'm sure as part of that deal, as part of that trade and whatever, there have been discussions about doing a deal, but he's not going to come cheap. There's always pluses and minuses about these things. And you're absolutely right. You know, a team that probably didn't need help was the 49ers, and they've got help.
So Little Rob from your side of the pond had a question for the three of us. Now it's just the two of us. He wants us to put our GM hat on and not think like Gutenkross, which we don't anyway. So that's already out. Would you replace Matt LaFleur? And he says right now, but I'm going to take right now as saying after this season, because we know he's not going during the season, regardless of what happens. Here's his reasoning. He didn't or couldn't coach 12 while he was here. And I always said, I think Aaron Rodgers is calling his own plays. He was calling out of place. That may or may not have happened. He is struggling to coach 10 right now. He can't scheme guys open. He doesn't get the ball to Aaron Jones, even though Aaron Jones is probably our most well-rounded dynamic player. That's his reasoning, plus Barry. But would you get rid of Matt LaFleur after this season?
Only Mark Murphy has the power to do that, because LaFleur and Gutti are actually on the same
level,
organizational level, since they made that structural change a few years ago. And you're absolutely right. The Packers traditionally have not made coaching changes in season. When they fired Mike McCarthy 12 games or whatever it was into the 2018 season, that was a huge shock for me, at least. Not because maybe it was time for both parties to go their separate ways. To do it in the season was really shocking and surprising for me, for the Packers. And I can't remember a time, despite really, really bad seasons, where the Packers have done that. So I agree, it won't happen in season. The second reason why it wouldn't happen in season, if you were to remove Matt LaFleur and say, I'm going to put an interim head coach in, Rich Bisaccia, would be the guy. I think you're still left with the remainder of the staff. So you're still left with Adam Stenovich, it's your offensive coordinator, who's never called plays. You know, you're still left complete same coaching staff. I don't think that fixes anything at all. For that reason, it's an in-season move that you should be making anyway. So some of the stuff is fixable, right? I just don't know how long it's going to take. What's not clear is how much of the offensive struggles in particular are down to play calling and that type of scheme system, or how much of it's down to the players haven't been performing at the level that they need to perform at. Now, some of that you could put down to perhaps coaching as well, or you've got a bunch of first and second year and third year guys that just haven't reached that level yet. And we don't know whether they're going to reach that level. Look at the receiving core. You know, we're all kind of thinking that receiving core is going to take the next step, but nobody in that group is taking the next step. I don't know how much of it's coaching stroke, play calling stroke. We just have to wait for those guys to develop. That's the difficult part. So even if you were to replace Matt LaFleur, the play caller, with somebody else, and I can't think of somebody off the top of my head, those other issues don't go away just by doing that. There are difficulties all over this team. So it's not just the offense. It's not just the defense. But you have to eventually make moves. You have to shake things up. The track record of Joe Barry before he came to Green Bay wasn't great, and it hasn't got better or a lot better in the time he's been in Green Bay. And I think that the inability to make moves may well be the thing that costs Matt LaFleur his job. Do I think the Packers will fire him after this season? No, I don't. I think the interesting thing for me is at some point in the coming year plus, Mark Murphy will retire. There'll be a new president CEO in there who may have completely different ideas, not just about the head coach, but also the general manager.
Thanks, Rob, for the question. We appreciate you. Okay, let's get on to this game. Vikings 24, Packers 10. I listened to it on the radio live. I do think, Peter, if we don't start winning games, that Larry McCarron is going to die of a broken heart on the air. I feel for Larry McCarron. Like, he is a Packer through and through. That guy doesn't like to see the Packers lose.
Yeah.
Wayne Larrabee probably doesn't either, but he didn't play for the Packers, you know? So I feel like there's that Larry McCarron is even more invested in the winning and the success of this franchise than Wayne is. Like, Wayne could go to, you know, Dallas and be the Dallas announcer or whatever and be just fine. I feel like he's like the, I don't want to call him the professional because that means that I'm calling Larry McCarron not a professional, but Larry McCarron is the former player who's still around talking about Packers stuff. And I worry for his health. The good, the bad, and the ugly on Sunday. I did watch the condensed version, which I'm very thankful that the NFL Plus does, because I can watch it in 45 minutes instead of 3 hours. The good on offense in this game, they only scored 10.
Their jerseys looked very smart before the game.
That's what you got?
The running game again was relatively okay. Right, so there were some plays that I know we're going to get to very, very quickly here where...
Not in the good.
where they're not in the good. Overall, it was relatively okay. Although, you know, a number of those yards were made by Jordan Love, not least on the, you know, the, right at the end of the game. It's a real struggle to find anything. I guess they moved the ball again in the third quarter and raised our hopes that they could pull something somehow miraculously out of the fire. I think the third quarter offense, again, whatever it is they're doing in the third quarter, they need to be running for all four quarters. But to be honest, I'm really struggling to find anything to pin my hat on for what was good in this game offensively.
I am not the Jordan Love apologist, but I know it doesn't sound like it, people, but I'm kind of highly invested in this show. So I watched shit like the JT O'Sullivan QB school, and I watched it after last week's game. The thing that JT O'Sullivan kept saying was Jordan Love is making throws more difficult than he has to. He's running up in the pocket rather than shuffling his feet so he can throw the ball in the pocket. I don't know if I'm making any sense. He would run forward and throw the ball, like run into the line to throw the football. In this game, and his numbers weren't bad either, but in this game, he climbs the pocket. He's still in a throwing motion where he can make a decent throw. And that happened in this game. I only saw him run up in the pocket one time in this game, and he had to. He couldn't shuffle. So I think that's an improvement. I don't know if it's Tom Clements. I assume it's coaching, which is what we talked about before. So I will take that. Jordan Love did not look disgustingly bad in this game. I thought he threw some balls that were not great. There was one to Dobbs for sure. I think the pick that he had probably could have been a better thrown ball a little bit farther down the field. It was a great play by the defender. But if you throw that ball, you know, a yard or two further, he doesn't pick that ball. He doesn't rip it out of Reed's hands. But I thought Jordan Love played well.
I thought he played a lot better than his numbers show. Still clearly work to do. But this was far from bad performance, far from his worst performance of the season. I thought it was a step forwards, even though the numbers and the offensive output don't necessarily show that.
You know, the other thing you said was you were worried that he wasn't checking down. He did that in this game.
He did. He did.
When Dylan's in the open field, as much as I beat up on him, he's going to run somebody over. He is going to run a defensive back over. They don't want him out there in the flat alone.
Yep, yep.
And I think that they've found something there. That was nice to see. And my guy, Jaden Reed, I still think he's the best wide receiver on the Green Bay Packer roster. I will go with that all day long. For me, he's my guy. Anything else good? I just stole it all right there. That's it. 10 points. And we're lucky to have 10 and not 7 because they had an offsides penalty on a 35-yard field goal that we missed. Let's go with the bad, Peter.
One thing I'm struggling with, and I think, you know, this is probably a result of having such a young receiving core and a young tight end receiving core. All over the league, you know, you watch games, you watch highlights. Every game, every week, you see receivers taking the ball away from defenders. You see receivers coming back and making plays on the football, receivers knocking down footballs that would have been intercepted, receivers making that tough catch, making the competitive catch, making the contested catch. You see that week in, week out, game in, game out. Doesn't matter which game you turn on, almost to the point where those kind of plays just become, oh yeah, it's just another play. mm-hmm. because it happened, but it could because it happens so much. For me, we see too little of that from the Packers group. And like I say, that might be a result of the guys being first, second, third year guys. But at some point on a team that's really struggling, and particularly struggling to move the ball offensively, you've got to make those plays. Somebody's got to step up. Knock that interception down. You know, come back for the football. You can't have six or seven drops. So officially, if there is an official stat, there were six drop passes. LaFleur said they counted more than that. In the presser, he said there were more than that. You just can't have that stuff. And like I say, in an offense that's struggling to move the ball, you have to have those plays. Somebody's got to step up and knock down those passes, fight for the football. I like Jaden Reed like you do. I think he's a very, very talented guy. But that ball cannot be intercepted.
100%. That was his
and
ball.
How many times do you see a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen or one of those make that same throw and the receiver comes down with that ball?
Yeah.
And everybody's saying, what a fantastic pinpoint throw that is by Mahomes or by Allen. To double that on top of that, you then get the stuff where Love does make a play early in the game. Dobbs makes a fine catch on the sideline for 20 yards down the sideline. And you've got a penalty. Now, I know some of that stuff's unfortunate. You just can't have that stuff happening. And that's the bad for me. On an offense that can't move the football, then you're taking plays away from them on top of that. It's got to be so frustrating as a player as to play in that, because it's damn frustrating to watch.
That call on Rashid Walker, too, on that play, holy smokes. Rashid Walker was just getting ridden down the field. He honestly wasn't running down the field to make a block. The rule was correct. Like you can only be a certain amount of down the field, but he was not attempting to make a play down the field at all. He just was getting pushed around, and that's where he ended up. That was a great catch by Dobbs and a really nice throw by Love as well. There were some throws in this game that Love made that it was Brett Favre-like, Aaron Rodgers-like, falling, I'm getting tackled, and an absolute strike to a wide receiver. I haven't given up on Jordan Love. I get a lot of questions about like, hey, should we try to get Caleb Williams? I say no, I'm out. Let's move on to the ugly. We talked a little bit about it, the drop passes. Musgrave is going to be a drop pass guy. He is starting to remind me of JerMichael Finley. He's going to make some great plays down the field. He's very fast. He's athletic as heck. He's going to drop some balls. I can't remember if it was Peter Bukowski, I think it was, on Twitter that said that in college he dropped like 17% of his balls. That might end up being a thing.
The thing I keep trying to remind myself about Musgrave is that he pretty much didn't play in 2022. You know, there's some leeway there in terms of him coming back, but boy, you've got to catch those passes. Break some tackles. You know, and that's the other thing I didn't mention amongst the receiving core is somebody break a tackle. Because again, that's commonplace all over the NFL. I think we knew coming into the season that this was a group of first, second, third year receivers, first and second year receivers, I guess, that we knew that these difficulties would exist. I guess we just almost tried to put them to one side or to the back of our heads. But in reality, we knew that these difficulties would be there. And that they will hopefully grow together. The other ugly for me, there's a number of them, but it started ugly, right? On that third and one play on the first drive. When you saw that back, Josh Myers, I don't know who he was blocking, but he ended up blocking nobody.
Yeah, he put his hand on the guy and then fell on his face.
So nobody blocked who in essence was the guy lined up over Josh Myers, the nose tackle, defensive tackle, whatever you want to call him. And he's the guy that made the play. Plenty of people have got on AJ Dillon's back this season about him not picking up yards and stuff. He had nowhere to go. Absolutely nowhere to go. And I don't understand how that happens, right? And I don't know what the blocking scheme was. I don't know whether it was intended for John Runyon to diagonally block that guy. I don't know what the scheme was. It looked like it was Myers' guy to block, prepared to give somebody the benefit of the doubt because I don't actually know what the blocking scheme was, but somebody made a huge faux pas on that play. It's stuff that you can't have. You cannot have that kind of stuff. You know, you go three and out, they come down, score, field goal, I think, and then you're three and out again and they score again. And before you know it, not only are you behind the eight ball in terms of the score, but you're mentally behind the eight ball. right? Because once you don't move the football, you start to believe that you can't move the football. Conversely, what happens in the third quarter is they start to move the football, therefore they believe they can move the football. It appears like that's something that is season long. I'm not one of these guys, you know, there's some fantastic guys on, you know, in the Packers world and Twitter and whatever that go back and look at every single play and will grade the plays and all that stuff. You know, Andy Herman does a super job of that, and there's other guys do all of that stuff. So I'm not one of those guys, but it appears that that type of thing's been happening week in, week out. And it's just,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I gotta talk about that third and one play for a second. What we do know, I've never coached the offensive line in my entire life, but what I do know on that play is that the center is not going to reach block and try to get to someone down the field. You are trying to get the 1 yard. This is not, I'm gonna, you know, touch the tackle, the defensive tackle, and then run and try to hit the safety. It's a third and one play. It's designed to get the first down. There were a couple plays that I think Andy Herman, Mike Wall did a couple. You watch it and you watch Josh Myers and he does something stupid. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to watch John Runyon on this play. Same fucking play, also doing something wrong. I don't know if it was that play or not, but Zach Thomas like pointed like, you're supposed to be going in that direction, you fucking dipshit. And then you look at Rasheed Walker and he's literally not blocking anyone, almost on every play. If it's not a passing play, Rasheed Walker is kind of just a, he's like that blocking dummy thing that they hold up. When 3/5 of your offensive line isn't good, what are you going to do? I also said on the group chat that we're in, Luke Butkus should be fucking fired. I'm sorry. If your guys are doing that week in and week out, again, you're either allowing it or you don't see it and you just let it go. Either way, you should be fired. This is a professional franchise trying to win a Super Bowl, not this year, but your goal is to win games. We're not trying to, like, you know, it's not high school football where I'm trying to develop good people. Your job is to win fucking games, and he should be fired right now, yesterday. Anything else before we move on to defense?
No.
I'm going to light up the swear jar all by myself today. So defensively, my guy TJ Slayton had a really good game. For a fifth-round pick, I'd say he's more athletic than he was given credit for by you and me. He is doing more things than just plugging the hole, plugging the zero or one gap. Without him, and I know that their interior offensive line is beat up and they're on a backup, but they did, I'm sorry, I'm going all over the place. They did deal Ezra Cleveland. The Vikings got rid of Ezra Cleveland because their backup, Dalton Reisner, was playing well enough to get rid of Ezra Cleveland. So, yes, it was the backup, but it was also the guy they ended up keeping as their starter. So, what else? Nothing?
I got nothing. No, I got nothing.
Preston Smith had two snacks. Preston Smith had two sacks. I'm sure he ate a couple snacks as well, but he had two sacks and a bunch of pressures. You know, I watched the condensed version just before we went on. Kirk Cousins was under duress a lot of this game. Like, he was getting, the pocket was getting pushed. If you watch it again, I think you'd be surprised how much pressure the Packers did put on Kirk Cousins before he went out. It's not usual. They were bringing guys, which is unusual for Joe Barry. I thought their defense, while they gave up 24 points, again, I'm complimenting the defense, but I thought they played okay. I think the defensive backfield played poorly, but I think the defensive line and Devondre Campbell had pretty nice games. What about the bad? Defensively,
it's more of a general thing than it is to point at individual plays or individual players. It's the inability to get off the field.
Yes.
I absolutely get that these are professional teams that are going to drive the ball. The number of long drives, you know, 11 play drive here, 13 play drive there. And I know it's complementary football, and I know that it's not helpful to the defense when the offense is going three and out, but that works both ways. Is the offense goes three and out, and I don't see the field for the next 20 minutes.
Right.
I guess the defense is schemed that way, is to try and not give up the big play. But to be a really good defense in this league, yes, you're going to give up plays. Right? Every defense, particularly in today's NFL, will give up plays. And they'll give up big plays. It's not just about not giving up huge chunk plays. You have to, A, get off the field, but B, you have to turn the ball over. Eventually, really good defenses force turnovers, and the Packers have forced, what, 6 turnovers all season? Not only are they ranked in the 20s in yards given up, they can't turn the ball over either. It's that continual long drive thing. And And that comes from multiple facets. So like I say, it's not one play in particular or one player in particular. It's the run, it's the pass, it's a tight end that gets wide open when you've dropped 100 people back into coverage and he's still 10 yards wide open. How does that happen? And it's like the previous week on the second and 31 play and they pick up 25. It's how does all that stuff happen? It's the run 1 week and the Packers played well against the run this week. They did. But it's the run 1 week. And the next week, it's the pass. And the next, you know, it's the whole inconsistency of it for me, which is the bad on defense.
You kind of stole my ugly. I was looking at Pro Football Reference to look at the drives and see it. There were so many third and eights, not third and one. I mean, you're going to give up third and one and you're going to get first downs against you on third and one.
Yeah.
But my gosh, third and eight, you should get off the field on third and eight. More than they did. And there were probably at least five times where the Vikings had third and eight and got a first down. That's unacceptable. Again, I'm on the Joe Barry should be fired thing. But again, he wasn't that there. That defense wasn't the reason they lost this football game, period. The other thing bad, Jair Alexander is not himself right now. I think Jordan Addison is a good football player, and I think Kirk Cousins threaded the needle on a bunch of passes to Addison that, you know, I don't care who's playing the defensive back, but he's not himself yet.
Yeah, I agree with that. And if my memory serves me correctly, and I apologize if it doesn't, but I think it does, is that he had a game in which he struggled before he went out with the injury. You have to believe that all of this is related to the back injury that he's got. And those back injuries, they can be really brutal.
Yeah,
you know, they take a long time to, you know, to resolve themselves, to heal. He's having a tough time right now, and you got to believe for a player of his quality that it's injury related.
I don't want to say this out loud, but here goes to everybody that's listening. If the Packers are 2-9 or 2-10 after this next stretch of games, and he's not right, I shut them the fuck down and let them get better. Because what are you playing for then? You're 2-10. He's hurt. You signed him to a relatively large contract. You want him to go out and play it. You don't need the David Bakhtiari thing all over again. You need Jair Alexander on this team as long as his contract will allow him to be out there. So I know I shouldn't say that, but I am saying it. How about the special teams? Rich Bisaccia was supposed to turn this thing around and fix all this mess.
It's meh. At the end of the season, you know, we'll see the full special teams rankings, but it kind of feels like they're somewhere in the middle of the pack. It did worry me when they missed that field goal that you talked about, albeit they got the second chance on that. But having missed one last week as well, when he missed that one to begin with, you thought, ah, here we go. This is the start of a downhill slide. Fortunately, they got the break there, made it. Maybe that won't be an issue. We shall see. I think the special teams are okay.
They're not losing games like they have in the past. I mean, for that reason, it's fine. The problem is if we would have had average special teams in 20 and 21 or 21 and 22, where would we be?
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is when you look at the whole team as a whole, when you're struggling in a particular area or multiple areas, somewhere else has to pick up the slack, has to make a big play. You know, and that can be the difference between being a 8-9 team and a 10-7 team or a 11-6 team. You know, that can make the difference of two or three wins in a season, which may not sound like a lot, but when you realize the Packers were one game out of making the playoffs at 8-9 last year,
right?
You know, that those little things make a huge difference. You know, there doesn't seem to be that, I don't want to say an individual stepping up, but it doesn't seem to be that somebody makes a huge play and we get a big break because, you know, you might need that little bit of luck. Just none of that stuff's happening. A turnover on a punt, anything, none of those things appear to be happening. And I guess that's what happens to teams that are struggling. You just need one of those things to turn it around.
We did have a blocked kick in this game. Carl Brooks blocked in a field goal.
This is true.
So we'll take that. I'm waiting for Keyshawn Nixon to run one back. I feel like that is still coming. And the punter, Daniel Whelan, absolute find. This is the second week in a row he averaged over 50 yards a kick, and it's not like he kicked 180. They're all 50-yard kicks. He had a long of 59, and he averaged 51.8. Absolute steal. And it's not September. You know what I mean? It's not like he's kicking them in a dome in perfect conditions. It wasn't super warm out. It was in the 40s. All right, so let's move on to next week's game, Peter. They play the Los Angeles Rams. The Packers, I think, are 3-point favorites right now.
My guess is, I don't know, and you may have a better update than me, or we will go and Google an update, is that Matthew Stafford may not be playing.
Well, I think that's it's trending that way because they just signed Wofford, I think his name is. Yeah. He was a former backup for the Rams. I mean, that's how I look at it. There's no way, right? No way I picked the Packers. I don't care if Matthew Stafford is playing or not. To me, that's bananas. No way. It's Mark Rippon's son. What's Mark Rippon's son's name? I don't even know, but he's the backup, I believe, in Los Angeles, unless Wofford.
Brett Rippon.
But they have that Puka Nacua, who is pretty good. Tyler Higbee plays tight end for them. Cooper Kupp, who hasn't come around 100% yet. They've got offensive weapons throwing the football. I'm not sure that I'm at all scared about their rushing. We'll see. Thoughts on the Rams?
They've struggled as well. I mean, they've struggled really ever since they won the Super Bowl. That was their year, and they peaked that year. I think that Matthew Stafford doesn't play, I would still have the Rams as a very tight favorite.
Same. Me too.
And I think on the basis that, you know, the Packers are on this, you know, they've lost 4 in a row now, 5 of the last 6. I think until you turn it around, it's difficult to see it being turned around. So there will come a game, I hope, where that turnaround happens. But until it does happen, it's difficult to see it. For me, I think the Rams, even without Stafford, the Rams would be a very slight favorite, 1.5 point or 0.5 point or something very, very close favorite.
I don't see it at all. I don't see the Packers as favorites in any game until they play the Bears in week 18. Aaron Donald still plays for the Rams. I haven't really seen, I mean, he's, I don't want to say he's falling off a cliff, but you don't see the Aaron Donald highlights every week where he's mangling somebody. This is a okay team. There's nobody that's great. It's what you said. Even without Matthew Stafford, I think they're still a better team until the Packers stop making mistakes. And it doesn't matter who you play, you can't keep making these same mistakes play after play after play after play. If it's not a penalty, it's someone running the wrong route. If it's not someone running the wrong route, it's Jordan Love throwing the ball into the ground. There's just so many things. The other part of it, and I kind of thought this when I was watching the game, is who are your playmakers? Aaron Jones should be a playmaker, but because the offensive line is not good, you have to throw him the football to get him out in space. Christian Watson should be a playmaker, but he hasn't done it. On the defensive side of the ball, like Jonathan Owens, nope. Rudy Ford, nope. Jair is hurt, nope. Now you don't have Rasul Douglas, so you're down to like Carrington Valentine or Corey Ballantyne, nope. Quay Walker, maybe, you know, and Rashawn Gary. They don't have that guy that is going to take the ball to the house. I don't feel like, oh, this guy could go at any moment. Keyshawn Nixon, maybe on special teams. But on defense or offense, I don't see that guy.
You know, and that's exactly what we were alluding to. It's particularly on teams that are struggling. You have to have somebody that makes that play, that steps in front of the receiver and on an out route to the flat or whatever, picks it off and just takes it to the house. Somebody that forces a fumble deep down in the, you know, in the opposition territory, all of that kind of stuff. AJ Dillon takes a dump off pass and somehow he goes 70 yards for a score, mm-hmm. You know, breaks a couple of tackles or like you say, a ball goes out to Aaron Jones in the flat. He's got two defenders ahead of him. He jinks past both of them. And all of a sudden, he's gone. Somebody's got to make that play, and I just don't know
who that is. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's one of my concerns going forward. Okay, so should we score predict the Rams and the Packers?
I think the Packers are going to win.
Do you really?
So I
thought you were making that up.
So I've said all of that, right? So here's my thing, right? So the Packers have got. I want to say they're playing. They've got the Steelers. And the Chargers, and
Chiefs,
the Chiefs
are there somewhere, yeah,
and all of those teams to come, and they finish somewhere. I think they play Carolina and the Bears right near the end of the season. They play the Bears in Week 18, Carolina, not long before that. If the Packers can't win this game, it's quite possible they don't win another game until they get to that Bears game, or maybe the Panthers game. Even the Panthers won this past weekend, so we'll see what happens with them. But the schedule's so difficult coming up. That if they can't win this game, it's difficult to see them Well, getting more than four wins, let's put it like that. And so I think somehow or other, I think the bounce of the ball, whatever, but the good luck, the luck that they haven't had, an interception bouncing off somebody's hands into a receiver's hands, et cetera, et cetera. I think something's going to happen this week. There's no rhyme nor reason to my thinking other than I really want it to happen because I'm scared that they, like I say, they won't win more than four games if they don't win this week. I think the Packers are going to pull this one out 21-20. Even though I believe the Rams are favourites to win, there's just something, the ever optimistic me has taken over.
Peter the Optimist, that's the name of episode 138. Here's the schedule. So Rams, Steelers, Chargers, Lions, Chiefs. You can't see a win in there if they can't beat the Rams. But then they go Giants, Bucks, Panthers, and then Vikings, Bears. That's the rest of the schedule.
I mean, you're right. When you get to like the Giants and the Bucks, you think you've got chance. My only thing there is if they lose this week, the chances right. are they lose the next three or four. And all of a sudden you're on a, I can't
five
count.
Game, six, seven,
six, eight, nine.
Yeah, yes, you're on an eight game losing streak at that point. Yeah, that's bad. So it's funny you said 21-20 because I also think it's going to be 21-20, but I think it's going to go the other way. I can't believe you said 21-20. That's what made me laugh. I think the Packers lose this game 21-20. They need to start scoring points. They had opportunities to score points. Honestly, they didn't play great, but they had so many opportunities in this game to win this football game. Dontayvion Wicks catches that ball on third and five, and they're, you know, first and goal from the three. You know, they got stopped on downs. They got the ball back. They sat that strip sack that Preston Smith had. There's so many reasons that the Packers could have scored points and they just didn't. All right. Anything else before we go? All right. So thanks for listening to episode 138 of the Average Cheese Podcast, the Arnie Herber episode. Go Petco.
Petco.